8 decades on from the victory over Nazi Germany, what is the main lesson that we need to remember today in that titanic battle against fascism?
So, first of all, we need to recognize that the victory over Nazi Germany was mainly the glory of Russia. So we have received a huge blow from this pan-European army united under Hitler, and that was always the main blow was against us. So invasion, there was Western European National Socialist invasion of Russia. We have lost a huge amount of people. And in spite of all the dramatic turns, that was essentially our victory. We don't undermine the importance of anti-fascist powers and movements inside of Europe. We don't want to undermine involvement of British or Americans in this war, but we need to recognize and emphasize that the main investment in this victory was made by Soviet people, by Russians, by our country. We suffered more than anybody else, and the result of this huge fight between extremely important and strong and powerful, not only economically, but as well ideologically, enemy, that was the burden was on our shoulders, on Russian shoulders. And that we need to stress, to emphasize, because now there are tendencies, and are the tendencies to steal our victory, to say that Russia was under the dictatorship of Stalin, the Stalin was the same or maybe worse than Hitler, and the main role was played by United States or British, and that is totally wrong. So that was the huge victory, the immense victory of Soviet people, of Russia, of Soviet Union. And that is the historical fact. But now, 4 decades after this great victory in our great patriotic war, there is the tendency to get the results, geopolitical results, ideological results of this victory from us. So that is because the history.
You think that's a concerted effort to do that?
Yes. I think that not only concerted effort. That there is already some facts. If you don't repeat the victory from time to time, the past, the victories of the past can be stolen. And for example, after we have lost our control over Eastern Europe and Warsaw Pact was dismantled, that was a kind of first stage of taking the results of this great patriotic war from us. And NATO has invaded this territory. After that, there was the collapse of Soviet Union. Soviet Union, the main actor of this victory. And the victory was very important foundational myth for the community of Soviet people, of unity, for unity of different societies living inside of the same unique state. And the collapse was the second moment of the loss of the results of this great victory. And after that, the Europe and the West in general, most of all globalists, started to undermine our involvement in that. So they started to say that Hitler and Stalin was the same, and one totalitarianism was in fight against the other totalitarianism. They were equal. So that is a kind of denying moral aspect, moral dimension of this victory. And after that, there was an idea that is not only Russia, and not so much Russia, but, for example, United States or Great Britain, they played a major role over Hitler. And after that, there was a kind of effort to rehabilitate Nazi ideology in Ukraine, supporting this banderit extremists. And that was a total reversal of our victory. And now we are dealing with that. That is not only the big glory and commemoration of our heroic acts and victory, but that is a very, very sad and bitter dimension of this commemoration of this victory, because the victory is almost stolen from us.
And is that why we don't hear in the West about the fatality numbers? 27 million people, civilians and soldiers, dead in the Soviet Union, 20 million in China. Even Indonesia had more dead than the combined totals of the US, the UK, France, Belgium, for instance. That fact always seems to be downplayed.
Absolutely. That is just elements of the huge war of the interpretation. So the history is not about the facts. The history is about of interpretation of fact. And in order to make the different image of some event, you emphasize some elements, you downplay different elements, and you change the image, because the history is the sequence of the images of victories, of loss, of great discoveries. And that depends from narrative, not from the fact themselves, because in the history, in the human life, in the human society, there are no such thing as once and for all established facts. The facts are revised, they are reinterpreted during history. And when, in one point, in one place, ideology is changing, that affects the history of the same place, of the same people. So that is very important, to fight for the historical memory. Memory, it is identity. So now we are in some sense, we are still in this war against Europe. We are still in the same great patriotic war against Nazi Germany, because it was not just Germany. It was not just Nazi. That was Europe. That was Western civilization that has attacked Russia. And we see in '90s, and now in the Ukraine, that this patriotic war still continues. So that is very, very dramatic element. So, and if we don't win this time, West in the Ukraine, we could totally lose this glorious victory. So nobody could grant to the world, to the humanity, the correct memory. Memory depends on the new victories. And if we could not secure the past victory without having the new ones. So that is the very, very, very tragic law. So you should, in order to secure the victory in the past, you need to gain the victory in the present and in the future.
Everything you've said there then perhaps leads me to say it's not surprising that such an event, an 80th anniversary of such a victory, has been politicized, increasingly so in Europe. But then you have, for instance, Central Asian leaders who have always come to Russia to support, to remember their dead as well. They don't want to politicize it. They want to see it as a remembrance event. There seems to be a stark division between East and West in that. Do you agree with that?
Yes. That is important. That was not only the victory of Russian people. That was the victory of the Soviet people. And in this time, the Asian republics were just a part of the same state. So we could say that was at the same level. The victory of Russia, as of Kazakhstan, of Uzbekistan, of Azerbaijan, so all the people of the Soviet, of Ukraine, the correct Ukrainians fought in this war, sacrificing their life, and among all there was the father of Zelensky, Vladimir Zelensky. He was the one of the Russian-Ukrainian hero fighting against Nazism. So that is very important. That should be normally the common memory. And in the case of the presidents and the leaders of the many Asian countries,
because they'll be put under pressure as well not to come, but they stand firm against that.
Yes, that is the dividing line,
right?
The line between those who are on the side of the victory and those who are fighting against that, and the menace, the threats of Ukrainian government, of Zelensky today, to attack, to accomplish some terroristic act during commemoration of 80 years of victory in Moscow. That shows that this war still continues. So, because it is not about Ukraine, it is about Banderit, about Ukrainian modern days, Ukrainian Nazism. So we are fighting the same war. The same war continues, and tragically, our allies in this war, the British and French, we supported de Gaulle, Charles de Gaulle, or Americans. Now, Americans, that is a different case with Trump, less clear, but the Western Europe, including UK or France, they are now in this new turn of this war, are on the side of the enemy.
Okay. If I can just mix in those varying things that you were saying, when it comes to Central Asia, is there friction between, or will there, between Russia and China? Xi Jinping is one of the main guests, of course, at the commemorations here in Moscow. How do you see that relationship developing in Central Asia between Russia and China?
So I think that there are some minor contradictions, but normally I think we share Russia and China, we share the common vision of the future of development of the Central Asia. There is no the real opposition or hostility there. So before, when the project One Belt, One Road initiative was somehow directed against us in order to link China to Europe, we considered participation of the Central Asian country in this project, purely Chinese project, as something that went against our interests. But now, in the context of the project of greater Eurasian project that was announced by Xi Jinping and Mr. Putin together, we have joined Russian interests, geopolitical interests, and Chinese geopolitical interests, adding some important belts, these belts, and that transformed the role of the Central Asian countries. They now participate in the common project, Russian-Chinese common project, and their Eurasian identity, Eurasian orientation fits very well in this new version of this common Russian-Chinese strategical plans.
Can I then just add the U.S. into this as well? Particularly when it comes to Donald Trump, his administration, it's been called his tactics when it comes to Russia is like a reverse Kissinger, using Russia to contain China, instead of the opposite way that Kissinger did. Will that work? Will Russia increasingly go more towards the US, or will it try and play itself as the main, in a geopolitical space, a very important role in the midst of that?
So, if we consider what we have now, we have the war in Ukraine started by United States, by Biden, that was recognized as well by Trump himself, and still U.S., EU, European Union, totally supports Nazi anti-Russian regime in Ukraine. So, how we could be confident in the West that started the and continues the fight against us, and still supplying lethal weapon our main enemy. So, in order to get our confidence, we need, I think, maybe 3-4 more terms, presidential terms of Republicans, Trumpists, at least. So our relations with China is based on a long-term strategy. It could not be broken apart in some ambiguous proposals from the United States. In order to get our full confidence, we need much more. We need some decades of the correct and confirmed friendship, and not just these declarations that we could that the United States could replace China. It is, but if it were so, including in that case, we never sell our friendship. So that is very important. Russia is very moral as a country, as a power, and moral and strategical alliance with China, it is something very, very deep. That is long-term strategy. But, for example, if we consider that Trump will show that we could rely not only on him, but on America in general. Now, what we see, there was Biden who started and provoked the war against us. And we still, before that and after that and during this war, we were and are the strategical allies with China. So nothing changed when the war started. Now Trump tries to stop the war and proposes to us some counterbalancing strategy. But what will happen if Democrats will return? So that is very unstable system. The West is hostile, unreliable, very treacherous. He betrays much more than keep its promises. And there is no one reason to be confident, to believe in what Western leaders, who are very, very they are short short-term leaders. Now they are here, tomorrow there will be someone with totally different opinion. We could not rely on these cartoons, globalist, liberal cartoons of the Western politics, because we see one certain line of globalist hegemony that is totally hostile to us, and we fight against that. And now we see some very positive counter-tendency in Trumpism. But it is just beginning. So in order to speak seriously with United States, Trump should lead the reforms he started until some conclusion, the point of irreversibility, because now we see how great is opposition to everything he does.
Just finally, I'm going to try something a little dangerous. Quick fire questions with a philosopher. I know maybe it's not in sync, but let's just try. Which leader, non-Russian, do you most admire around the world right now?
So I admire Xi Jinping. I think he's a great leader. He transformed the growth and the rise of China in something very stable. So he has used his participation in the globalization, but to the favor of its own country. So he is wise master, number one, I think, who could combine participation, liberalism, and globalism, and at the same time to make China really great.
Okay.
So that was the art. Second person, I would say, I don't speak about Putin because we have spoken about him. I admire him as well. Obviously, we have spoken of him. But outside of Russia, I admire Modi. I think Modi is very, very, very great leader. He tries to make India great again. He tries to concentrate the possibility of inner growth of huge Indian society in order to consolidate civilizational political sovereignty. And Donald Trump, I would say.
Okay.
I like Donald Trump because at least he started to fight against the worst that we could imagine, because against this Kamala core, against this Biden, against this globalist in United States, because before Trump, United States, in my eyes, was worst thing at all. That was the bottom line of the history of human degeneration. And Trump is trying to get new dawn to the West. So I appreciate him very much. And I like very much Iranian leader, spiritual leader,
Ayatollah
Khamenei, who is the living representative that traditional organization of political or religious society is still possible in 21st century.
And then conversely, which world leader can't you believe actually got voted in or otherwise as leader of a nation? Who's the worst?
I think that there is the group of the monsters. So the people like ideological leader George Soros, philosophical leader Henri Bernard Lévy or Yuval Harari, economic leader, it is Schwab. They are worst, in my opinion. And political leaders, Keir Starmer, Macron, and Merz, they represent something really awful. So that is insult to the Europe to have such degenerated persons who still lead them.
And just finally, if true reconciliation between Russia and the West is going to happen, what is the main thing that the West needs to understand about Russia, that perhaps it's not willingly or otherwise comprehending right now?
I think there are two main scenarios of such coming together on some points. First, some reconciliation. First version of reconciliation, we could agree on the our loyalty to our common roots. If we return to Christianity, if we return to tradition, if we return to Plato, Aristotle, or the thought of Middle Age, we could count on some deep mutual understanding. So we have common roots, and these roots have nothing to do with the modernity. So on this return to the traditional values announced already by Trump, it is not, or for example, defended by Euroconservative, Europopulists. So it is not totally impossible. So people in the West who try to restore their deep identity are not too rare. They have overcome the elections in the United States. That is very important fact. So we could think that Russia and the West could rediscover our common Christian, Mediterranean, Greek, Roman, philosophical, religious, and spiritual roots. Basic on that, we could, maybe, I'm dreaming, but we could create, make agreements of restoration of our deeper identity. But that is one thing. There is second form of reconciliation. So we could accept each other as two different civilizations. For example, more traditional Christian Orthodox Eurasian Russian civilization, on one hand, recognized as such, and the Western liberal modern civilization. So everybody recognized Western civilization as such, but nobody in the West recognized Russia as independent civilization. So we are in asymmetric position. If Russia will be accepted as something different, neither worse nor better, but just different, but just original. So as a continuation of Byzantine Empire, Orthodoxy, and Eurasian cultural patterns, that will be enough. If we will be recognized, we could make a kind of agreement between two versions of the same Christian civilization, two branches, but recognizing each other independence and sovereignty and autonomy. That could be pragmatical alliance that could not based on the values but based on the mutual recognition of our difference. That could be the second reconcilement. But what I am sure that never will happen, that idea to transform once more Russia in the West, to transform Russia into the part of the modern globalist liberal or postmodern West. That will never happen. So this kind of reconciliation under conditions of the globalist is quite impossible.